All right, we're here. Grumpy Dungeon right. Masters, we're live. Although when you listen to us, it won't be live. But right now, we're live.
We're live right now, and then we're about to die.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So I'm the Grumpy Dungeon Master, Jay, my co-host.
And my name's Christopher.
Wow, that was... It's almost like you were high or something when you said that.
I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I LARPed all weekend. I can be tired.
Hey, as somebody who has spent a lot of years LARPing, I get it, man. I get it. It's 2 full days of very little sleep and lots of activity. Lots of being physical when you normally are just sitting behind a desk all day.
I hadn't moved that much in 3 years.
Yeah. Was that the first time since pandemic that you'd been there?
Yeah.
Damn.
So yeah, the first night was horrible. The second night was okay. And now I'm like, as soon as Craig leaves this room, I'm
just out. Just out.
But it was a lot of fun. One of the big field battles, we had to fight a bunch of sea creatures, and that was it was interesting. We killed like 16 water drakes by ourselves, our little group.
Nerd.
And I spent like 30 minutes stuffing sea animals back into the holes they were trying to crawl out of. Like they're
back
coming out of the
hole.
Ceiling. They're coming out of the ceiling, and like the starfish was like rotating and like uncovering new holes, and like different animals would come out. So being the giant that I was like, all right, I'm just going to go up there and just start pushing them back in. Like, no, you stay in the hole. Stay up there.
For anybody who doesn't have a fucking clue what we're actually discussing, it would what you just said sounds like a person on a DMT trip.
Yes.
Like, everything that just came out of your mouth made no sense to anybody who hasn't LARPed before.
That's okay. I mean, we cater all kinds. So yeah. I want to talk about NASCAR next.
Oh, is there a NASCAR role-playing game? Can you play Jeff Gordon?
I think you could. I think you could make that possible.
Probably. There's pro wrestling games that are role-playing. I don't think there's any real sports ones. None that I'm familiar with. But there are lots of sports board games, including NASCAR. Actually,
tabletop RPG. Yes, there is a NASCAR RPG game.
Well, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I do own a card game / board game called Fast and Fatagon, where you drive in Cthulhu-powered cars, and it's like Demolition Derby. You just run people off the road and stuff, run over pedestrians.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the rules are so bad, I actually have never been able to figure out how to play it.
I remember one time I found a bunch of Highlander trading cards. And we had no idea what the rules were, so we just kind of made up our own rules to work with the cards as we...
Yeah, in the end, the last person with one card left wins, because there can be only one.
Pretty much is what it was. But yeah, I had a couple of things, even though I wasn't doing much D&D over the weekend. I did have a really cool Adventures League week last week, and a little story for you.
Oh, all right.
So, remember how you hate falling damage?
I hate the way it's done, yes. I don't hate falling damage, I just hate the method of getting there.
So, I almost TPK'd a party with falling damage.
Alright.
And the best part was, is like, I wasn't the one making them fall. So, the group is in Avernus, and they had to go raid this... They call it the dump. It's like this weird castle fort thing that was basically pulled into Avernus, and it got stuck in a wall. And they have to descend 100 feet to where this like little fort is. And then they can kind of like work their way inside, or they can go down 150 feet to the very bottom where the River Styx is and like sneak their way in up that way. So they talk about what their game plan is going to be. The best idea they could come up with was fireball all the goblins / demons that are on top of the fort and then work our way down via rope.
All right. That sounds reasonable.
So then they fireball the demons in hell, or the devils in hell.
Yeah, which are going to be...
None of them take any damage because it's fire.
Well, they should take half.
No. They're all immune to fire damage.
I thought it was resistant, but all right. I don't have the book in front of me.
They're all immune to fire damage. So that happens, and they start crawling down the rope. Okay? So the barb devil that I have throws a fire, its little fireball that it has, and burns the rope halfway down. So they're scaling down 100 feet, and...
Okay, hold on. Since we're talking rules as written, fireball, yeah. I'm going to say some shit that I don't know because I don't have the fucking book in front of me. Does it catch mundane items like a rope on fire?
So fireball does catch, because anything that is flammable burns. Okay. So the round starts. There's a monk. One guy ties off the rope. A monk crawls down the rope and then drops, and then he lands. What doesn't take any falling damage.
Yeah, he's a monk.
Because monks. Then a dwarf comes halfway down. That's when the barb devil throws its firebolt hurl flame ability that it has. And I had it target the rope. Okay? So rope is an object that can be attacked. Okay?
Yeah.
It's tiny, in my opinion, being that it's 60 feet away. Okay? And I'm attacking a square, so I'm attacking the rope. So I gave it disadvantage. Any mundane object has an AC of 10. And because I said the rope was tiny, I gave it 5 more AC. So now the rope has an AC of 15.
Yeah.
Ropes have 10 hit points.
Yep.
So the firebolt does 3d6 damage.
Yeah, it actually says deals 10 damage specifically for Barb Devil. Yeah.
So he hurls the flame. It hits the rope. The rope almost burns completely. I rolled really low on the 3d6. It wasn't 10. It was like 9.
Okay.
But he gets to throw twice. So the second one that gets thrown up there hits it and does the remaining 1 point of damage. The rope burns off halfway through, and then a dwarf falls. The dwarf critic falls 50 feet. Okay.
All right.
So then we have a barbarian, and it's like his turn. Other stuff happens, like range attacks, nothing spectacular. So it gets around to the barbarian's turn. So he scales down the rope 50 feet, and he rages and then jumps and then basically tries to do a superhero landing.
Sure.
Still took damage, but he was raging, so he didn't take that much.
Yeah, plus he's a barbarian, so he should have a shitload of hit points.
Yeah, he does. So then there was a tiefling who has wings. So he has a fly speed equal to his move speed. But he had, from walking through Avernus, had basically taken 2 levels of exhaustion. So his max speed in like a dash was like 20 or something like that.
Yeah, and dash does it. So it's effectively has a movement of 10.
Yeah. So he was like, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to jump off the cliff, and then right before I get to the ground, I want to basically flare out my wings and move, aka fly, the remaining spaces down. And I sat there and I thought about it. Because there's nothing in the rules about if you're falling and you can fly, if you can basically fall a certain distance and then begin to fly.
Yeah, it's not covered at all.
Right.
There's nothing like that.
So what I told him he could do is because he's falling outside of his movement range, he can't fly.
Yeah.
All right. So you're still falling 100 feet. It's like, but because you have wings, I will give you the opportunity to basically like flurl them out and basically land safely on the ground. Because that makes sense to me as well.
Yeah.
So he's like, all right, I got this. It's like, so he goes ahead and does it, and he flurls out his wings to try to stop, like, you know, 10 feet and basically land safely. And he's like, go ahead and give me a strength saving throw for that. And then he remembered that he was exhausted.
So yeah, everything's a disadvantage.
And I set the DC at 15. So he pancaked into the fortress, fell 100 feet. So
he didn't even go 50 feet down the rope. He just
jumped right off the top.
I mean, even climbing down the rope, he's at disadvantage and probably would have pancaked anyway.
Yeah, maybe. So I now have to roll 10d6.
Yeah.
For his damage. When all was said and done, I rolled this out in the open for everybody. He took 45 damage.
How many hit points?
Not 45.
Less than that, okay.
So he pancaked into the ground. Just splat. Tiefling everywhere. They almost TPK'd right then. There's one other person that was up on the ridge, and she was just like, I'm not going down. I'm going to stay up here. And everyone else was just like trying to fight through these barbed devils and goblins that I had. And they took so much falling damage that just couldn't like keep moving, you know?
Yeah.
Of course the barbarian has the 20 AC and the +8, whatever he wants, you know? So that's hard to kill him.
Everybody else going to be struggling though.
Yeah, everybody else was struggling. But luckily, there are new rules now for Adventure League. I don't know if I mentioned this in the last podcast, but they have restructured Adventure League. They got rid of all their content creators. So now they're no longer making content for each season like they have been.
Yeah, I think you had mentioned this a little while back. It might have been off the pod, though.
So now what they're going to do is they're going to release basically a pamphlet, basically how to run the book, the recent book that comes out, as Adventure League. And then basically want the community to make the adventures for them. And there's a certain like code you can put in to basically make the, if you search for it on DM's Guild, you can find Adventure League modules and stuff like that.
Okay.
I don't really know how I feel about that. Like, there are a lot of really talented DMs out there who are making a lot of really talented content. You know, I feel like my content's good that I have on DM's Guild. But I really kind of feel like Adventure League should have its own content that they're putting out that works in conjunction with the books. Very much like how Frost Maiden had one, Avernus had one. And while, you know, I've kind of mocked the Avernus one that I've run so far as not being the best content, it's basically because like everyone is like writing their own piece of it. So it's kind of like that one high school writing assignment you got where someone has to write a paragraph and then the next person writes another paragraph.
Yeah.
They keep treading back and forth until they're done. If they had just a small team of just people who just basically sat together and just wrote out smaller modules, like in tiered format, like 3 or 4 modules, and that was it, it would be a lot less work, and they could get these things rolled out. Because the amount of time that these people have to put into these things, they're throwing so much effort into these things, and it's not working because every week has to be something new, but there's no carry-on MacGuffin from week to week to week. So people are introducing all this new stuff every single week, and it's crazy.
It's not, like, yeah, there's no cohesive modules. It's just you're running a bunch of one-offs.
Yeah, but one-offs, but they're kind of like a story, but not in a story. And it's like this week, you know, attacking the fort was great. I threw out the first half of the module because they wanted to do more like investigation and talking to new NPCs that we hadn't talked to in the previous 3 weeks that we have there. And just like, it's too much. Like, they just need to like focus it a bit more.
Yeah.
But it's all irrelevant now since, like I said, they got rid of the team.
Well, because you're talking about now they're effectively running campaigns. You're running bits and pieces of these campaigns, but those campaigns are not designed for running random people in for 3 hours once a week.
Yeah.
That is not the intention.
Those are going to be really hard to do. I mean, like, Frost Maiden was okay because it was very open-ended.
You could run, like, there's a lot of, in the very beginning, like, yeah, the first bit, there's 8 or 10 separate little yeah, one-off quests. That one was designed kind of for that.
Yeah, and so that worked fine. But even, like, the AL Frost Maiden adventures that they made worked really well, and they flowed pretty well. But running the campaign book after, like you said, like the first couple chapters, you know, it's really difficult because there's major decisions that have to be made that affect the world. Mm-hmm. And like, if you missed that week, you know, oh yeah, sorry. Yeah. You missed the week where we decided to let 10 towns burn to the ground. Sorry. I hope your investment's still there. You know?
Yep.
So I don't know how to handle that yet. I don't know how to move forward with that. If AL is just going to kind of be just run whatever you want to run, then why have us put in codes and track stuff week to week and whatever I want to run.
It sounds like they don't know what they want right now. And a lot of that could just be their attention is focused on 6th edition.
Well, the Adventure League team is different than the content creators.
I'm just saying the company in general right now. Because
it's a separate thing. It's official WotC, but the team has nothing to do with anything. They're not even in the same city.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you said they just let them go.
Well, they let some of the team go. Yeah.
But if they're separate from WotC, how come WotC let them go?
You know what I mean.
Are they? No, I don't. I'm very curious. Are they employed by WotC, or are they not?
There's a team that's employed by WotC, but they don't work on the current modules or systems. They just kind of handle their own
Adventure League. So they are WotC employees specifically for that, which means they have to have WotC oversight. Currently, WotC is focusing on 6th edition. My money would be on them pulling that team back, putting them elsewhere, or getting rid of them all together as they're just content writers, which means they're probably just, you know, they're sort of temp hire anyway. The contract workers, basically. So they probably have let them go until this next edition hits, and then they kind of refocus into what they're going to do.
Maybe, because like in 4th edition, Adventures League was called D&D Encounters. Maybe they're coming up with something new for 6th edition. I don't know. But, I mean, who knows? By the time we get, like, I mean, technically, Season 12 was supposed to start on September 2nd, and it still hasn't started because they forgot they either had a problem with the rules haven't been published yet or anything like that, and already halfway through September, so who knows. Yeah. But, like I said, I'm kind of just taking AL and just like, okay, DMs can run whatever they want to run. When we're done with running the stuff we're running now, I'm just going to basically pay people to a table of 5 people, 1 DM and 4 players, and force people who are coming out just to play but don't want to DM, like, we're tired of having 2 tables of 8 players. So
yeah,
they gotta DM themselves now.
Somebody's gotta step up.
Step up. Roll them dice. My wife is stepping up, actually.
I'm looking at you, Muffin. Looking at you, Muffin.
My wife is going to be DMing her first game on stream live on our Twitch this Saturday.
All right.
Because we're missing a player and we're almost at the end of the Phandelver run through that we're doing, we don't want to basically do the end of the campaign without the player. So my wife is filling in and running a one shot from Candlekeep. And she's going to try DMing for the first time.
All right.
I can tell she's nervous because there's a lot of like questions that she's been asking me, like, how many encounters do I run in a day? And so then, like, I told her about like the daily XP allotment and what that means for like easy encounters and medium encounters and how you add up all those encounter XP totals. And that's the amount of encounters that the team should be able to handle in a single day before another long rest, you know? And I told her, like, you know, what I try to do is that for like a stream, I try to, you know, budget out 3 encounters for a stream because we have 4 hours. I give every encounter 1 hour worth of time and an hour for RP. And then if I need to, I have usually another counter waiting in the wings in case something happens. I guess the module she's running has a lot of, like, if you're stupid, an encounter happens. And there's like 9 different encounters that she needs to set up in case we do something stupid.
Oh, yeah, because you're doing it on stream, so she's got to have all the maps and everything put together.
Well, one thing I was trying to tell her is that if there's an encounter that's like against, like, if we do something stupid, so let's say I'm in a magical library, okay, and there is a painting on the wall, and I walk up to the painting and I stab the painting, and the painting was actually alive, and it's a monster of some kind. You don't really have to, like, stop the game, have us roll initiative, and have us have a combat encounter with that thing. You can just have that one monster exist and kind of just go around the table and have players do what they want to do.
Yep.
And just not really have the encounter, but kind of having, like, a pseudo encounter. That way you're not taking initiative, but also... If you can
run that as a full encounter.
Yeah.
You can even do it online. You can just take a fucking blank map, throw any figure out there as that one monster plus your character's figures, and that way you just sort of know positioning.
And yeah.
It's that simple.
But I mean, what I was trying to get to is that if you have just a random monster that's basically attacking somebody and you know it's not a threat. Let's say it's just a single monster. It's got like 50 hit points. Your party's level 5. Yeah. You don't have to stop the game and get initiative and see what people want, because then that kind of gives them the impression that they have to fight this thing. You know, you could just have it be a role playing encounter where I stab the painting. The painting is now punching me in the face somehow, and all we gotta do is just walk away from it, and it's done. And the painting's just gonna hang there on the wall. You know, you don't have to make that a combat encounter. You could just basically be a weird thing that caused a little bit of damage, but we just moved on from it.
Yeah.
Not every encounter has to be combat related and running that way. You can just have it be something that's just funny.
Well, they generally,
somebody takes damage and moves on.
Generally, if somebody starts stabbing things, though, that's a combat encounter.
Yeah, but if the encounter is going to be super easy, you don't need to make it a combat encounter.
Yeah. If it's not up to the challenge level, don't bother. It's just
if the monster's CR 1/4,
yep,
and the party's like level 4, don't make it a combat encounter.
Yeah. don't waste your time or your player's time with stuff like that. That really is, it's a waste of time. There's not a challenge there. So don't do it. I wanted to backtrack a little ways from what we were talking about earlier with the falling thing.
Yeah.
All right. So, because there are no rules for the exact example you gave. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So let's just make a scenario, 100-foot fall. And say the guy's in perfect condition. He has the ability to fly up to his movement. All right. Now, if you dash, that's up to 60, you know, standard person, that's going to be 60 feet of movement that you can pull off in a round, 100-foot fall. There's a number of different ways that can be handled because there are no rules as written. So I think rules as written, if you could effectively allow 60 feet of flight.
Mm-hmm.
So if they decided to fall the 40 feet and then decided to fly the other 60, you could allow that as a DM. You could also say that 40 feet is 40 feet of your movement, which means that they could then just fly 20 more feet and then they are going to have a 40-foot fall. That is another way of handling it. Then there's the idea of what your player tried to do, of falling the 90 feet, fly the last 10. The way you handle it could be, there's a number of ways you could handle it. You know, allow them an athletics check, allow them an acrobatics check, allow them a strength check, or even not allow it. As a DM, scenarios like that, you will have to sort of, you have to come up with an answer for it. You could just say you can't even try. If you fall off that cliff and you've got 10 feet of flight, that's all you have, you can't even attempt it.
Right.
Yeah, you could just say you're going to fall the 100 feet. If they have 60 feet of flight, that's a little different. But if they only had the 10 feet, like in the scenario you suggested earlier.
there's a lot of times, too, where like DMs are given like weird physics questions, and you're not a physics expert. You're not a rocket scientist. You don't know how things are going to work.
Yeah, we discussed this last week with the reverse gravity on a ship. I don't really fucking know what's going to happen. We have to make this shit up as we go.
I saw some random TikTok where like the player did something and the DM's like, no, I don't think that would happen that way. I think it's going this way. So that's the way he ruled it, and the player accepted it. But they have like some like weird science lab that they went to, and they recreated the experiment, and ultimately the DM was wrong. But still, it's like, that's going a far way to kind of prove your point to the DM that you were right and they were wrong. But just, you know, as long as the player like understands that we're not going to know, there's not going to be a rule for everything.
Yeah.
And as long as you have fun with it, and then you max out the falling damage die and they die immediately, everybody has fun.
I mean, really, them falling to their death, that's what you're doing it for in the first place, right?
Yeah. Deserve.
Yeah, that scenario is not actually in Avernus. Chris just made that up just so he could see his players fall to their deaths.
So now you're in like a 700-foot drop. I don't like the fact that like if you fall in D&D, no matter what the length of falling is, you fall that distance in 6 seconds.
Oh yeah. that's one of them we did look up before.
Yeah, there is a maximum, but it's still homebrew rule.
Yeah, but there actually is a mathematical equation that will determine exactly how far you fall within 6 seconds. I can't even tell you what the distance is at this point. I will say, if you're falling for 6 seconds, you've pretty much hit terminal velocity. And you will pancake exactly like the tiefling did.
Yeah. I'm surprised there aren't more rules for like things falling on your head. I know there's the variant rule with mass, or I think it's massive damage of something that falls on top of you, but I really think that the DM's Guild, or the DM's Guild, the Dungeon Master's Guide really has a lot of great stuff in it, but like it's kind of like just weirdly buried away. And Chris Perkins did mention that he's planning on addressing the Dungeon Master's Guide for 1D&D and kind of make it so that more of the rules, the more of the variant rules are addressed and added to an easily lookupable index so people can figure out these things and these weird complex science experiments. Like, for example, like when you launch something at somebody, do you like ever, like say it's at an angle. So like we had a person shooting down on the bad guys from top of the 100-foot cliff, you know, so, but if they're down 100 feet and then over 50 feet from the player, right.
How far are you actually shooting?
Yeah. How far are you actually shooting? I honestly don't care. I know the distance is longer. I know A squared plus B squared equals C squared, but I'm not going to do the math. If it feels too far, it's too far. If it doesn't feel too far, it's fine.
I will do that. I will actually do the math, but I don't super complicate it. Okay, so if you're shooting down 100 feet and they're out 50 feet, I'm going to half that distance that they're out. So you're effectively shooting 125 feet. You know, it's like if you're shooting at somebody, you're 30 feet away, they're on top of a 10-foot building. There's, you know, I'm halving that 10 foot. So you're shooting 35 feet.
Okay.
I don't know. And I mathematically, that may not be exact, but it's simple.
Yeah. If a player does the math for me, I'll accept it. But I'm not doing it.
Yeah. No, I don't blame you. Yeah. There's only so much time in the day. And everybody knows I suck at math in the first place. So if you expect me to overcomplicate stuff, you can just fuck right off.
I love how you said, like, everyone knows that you're bad at math.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone. Like, some random old lady you meet in the street in the grocery store. Oh, you're Jay, right? You suck at math. No, bye.
No, yeah, they just see me from across the street. He's bad at math. Yeah.
He can't even count his own teeth. His own tooth.
Which is funny that I say that, because I'm going to be running a Shadowrun game here soon.
Oh, my God. Don't do it.
Oh, no, I am so fucking looking forward to it, man.
You have to roll 750,000 D6 to do damage.
Yeah, but, that's actually really simple, because you have a target number, so you roll like 20 D6s, and if that target number is 4, then you pull every one of them that's a 4, 5, or 6. There's your number. That's your successes. Pretty straightforward. For every 2 successes, the damage meter goes up by 1.
I remember that I had a program to make a troll samurai that I had and played one time. And I just remember,
why am I not surprised that you would play a troll street samurai?
I don't even know how I got to be a troll samurai. And the best part is, like, I didn't have any reference to what the troll was. So to me, it was a World of Warcraft troll.
Well, you know, it's big. Well, I guess actually in World of Warcraft, they're kind of medium-sized, aren't they?
No, they're the tallest creatures.
I think we've discussed this before. Yeah, because you're thinking of them
straight up.
Yeah, you're thinking of them skinny and lean and kind of long arms.
Yeah.
And that's not what they are in Shadowrun.
No. So, like, I was like some like troll samurai in a bar, and I remember rolling to attack, and like all these D6s showed up, and I was like, oh shit. And then I rolled again, like, all this. More D6s showed up for the damage. I was like, I did something, I think. I remember I just grabbed a hold of a ceiling fan and, like, swung around and, like, chopped at people. I don't know why.
Wow. It was
weird.
I'm a little surprised the DM would even allow that as a troll on a ceiling fan. That had to be the sturdiest goddamn ceiling fan that's ever existed.
I don't know. Like I said, I pictured a lanky dude, so.
Yeah. Yeah, because trolls in Shadowrun, for those who aren't familiar, they are 7 to 8 feet tall and, I don't know, 600 pounds of just huge, meaty monster.
Oh.
Yeah, they're massive. So you literally just picked the biggest creature that you could possibly play. You picked the fighter class, effectively.
Hey, you, just how I roll.
Yeah, you're stereotyped for a reason. But I'm really, really, really looking forward to running this. I'm going to take that break from D&D. This coming weekend, I'm going to run the last episode of the first half of my D&D campaign. And then it's going on hiatus for a while. I don't know how long. And yeah. I'm going to pick up Shadowrun at least for a while, run my players through it, because none of them have ever played Shadowrun. Oddly enough, I sat down with several of them this weekend before the Ravenloft game, and 3 of them had no idea what Shadowrun was at all. Apparently, they had never heard of it. So,
I mean, it is. I knew of it only because I remember seeing it, and there was a video game that I bought and played that for a little bit.
Was that the shitty one that came out in like the mid 2000s, maybe a decade ago?
I don't know. I can check Steam real quick, because Steam games never go away.
Oh, wait. If it's on Steam, no. There was a bunch of RPG ones they released that were actually true to the
system. I got Shadowrun Returns.
Yeah, that's a really good one. That's true to the game.
Okay. I just remember, like, I played like through the first stage, had some shotgunner, and was just walking around shotgunning people in the face. Like, like my turn would come up, I'd walk up to them, shotgun to the face. Then just walk up to the next one, shotgun to the face. And it's like, this is easy, and I never played it again.
Yeah. I played all of them that they released. There were actually four of them like that they released. One of them you can't, I don't think you can get it on Steam anymore for whatever reason. But there were Shadowrun Returns, Shadowrun Hong Kong, and Shadowrun Dragonfall. And I played through all three of those games.
You played Shadowrun Returns for 32.7 hours.
Yeah. Hong Kong. Not very long of a game. Hong Kong and Dragonfall I never completed. But yes, they're not massive games. But anyway, for those who aren't familiar with Shadowrun, just since apparently half my players weren't familiar, think Cyberpunk. It's like Cyberpunk 2077, except you add magic into the mix. So there are other races like trolls, orcs, elves, and dwarves that are playable. And it's a wholly other system.
You just need to watch the movie Bright, but make it more post-apocalyptic.
See, people say that. I don't think Bright is accurate.
Bright isn't Shadowrun, but like, if you were to make a Shadowrun movie, the closest one that they have so far would be Bright.
Yeah, there are several things that are reminiscent of Shadowrun that are out there in media. Bright is reminiscent, but people say it's Shadowrun. I disagree. I always liken it to Lord of the Rings is fact. It actually happened, and Bright takes place 4,000 years later.
Yeah.
That's how I think.
And Shadowrun is 1,000 years later from Bright.
Well, not really, because Shadowrun, at least the edition I have, takes place in 2050, which, I mean, it was written in the 90s, so I guess that's like 30 years now. we're almost there. We're getting pretty close to when it's supposed to happen.
Right. I still remember when 2005 happened, because that's when the Transformers woke up. But no Transformers woke up in reality.
Yeah, I'm still waiting to race change into a dwarf or an elf, because that's what happened in Shadowrun. Magic came back into the world, and what had been normal humans started changing into dwarfs, elves, orcs, trolls, so forth. Dragons came back into the world. But yeah, Bright is one thing you can look at. Johnny Mnemonic, which is a movie from the late 80s with Keanu Reeves in it, late 80s, early 90s. But it doesn't have the magic aspect of it, but it has the Shadowrun setting. It's very cyberpunk.
Yeah.
And then Cyberpunk 2077. They also came out with the anime on Netflix recently of Cyberpunk Edge Runners, which I just finished yesterday.
Cool.
Yeah. All this stuff is brought to you. Effectively, it was created by William Gibson, the whole cyberpunk genre, back in the 80s. I guess it was 80s. He was on drugs all the time, hanging out up in Seattle and Vancouver. Started writing books about the future and technology.
Speaking of like weird timelines, I remember there's a Christopher Lambert movie called Fortress.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen it.
And like it starts off like in the year 1999, the government's taking over. You can't have babies anymore. And then like I remember like the first time like it registered to me like that's coming up soon. Like that's almost here. Are we all going to die? I don't know. I've always liked that. I always like to like when it's like 20XX.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
21XX.
Yeah, I was thinking about it today, oddly enough. All of these things are science fiction. Shadowrun or Fortress, or hell, even Warhammer 40K. These are all fiction, science fiction. But at some point, they become sort of science past.
Yeah.
You know, because in 2050, whatever, which is not real, real far away, like I could potentially easily still be here. And at that point, it'll be weird running Shadowrun. Because it's definitely just some alternate universe. It's not our Earth.
Yeah, and it is so weird. And like that's why sometimes, like, you know, when I'm playing, like, you know, D&D and with Fate Run and stuff like that, like knowing what year it is in the game really does help me set the tone for like the game, because I know certain events that could happen or don't happen. But when we play a game that's more closer to reality, or watch a movie that's very closer to reality, like, you got to be spot on with those numbers. Like, you know, Stranger Things, they're really good with the show with like saying this is 1986 and everything in there is 1986 based.
Yeah.
But all that stuff that we watched when we were kids, like Escape from New York, for example, 2003, New York City has gone bad and now it's just a prison island.
Yeah. Well,
like, why did that happen for real?
I think that was like that movie was supposed to take place in the 1990s. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
No. It took place after 2001, because I remember because 9/11 happened, okay? The world of Escape from New York is a timeline where 9/11 didn't happen, because it happened after 9/11 happened in reality, and the Twin Towers are still in Escape from New York.
I'm actually looking to see exactly. 2013 is when Escape from LA happened. Yeah, 1997. I think 1997 is when Escape from New York was supposed to take place.
Okay.
Yeah, that's when it was. Which, yeah, 1997 is long since gone. The thing is, when the movie came out in the 1980s, New York was kind of a shithole. I mean, it was. Drugs were everywhere. It's nothing like Times Square was just a bunch of fucking strip clubs. And throughout the 90s, they I'm not going to get too deep into it, but they changed to the mayor of New York, who made a lot of changes to the place. Yeah, they ended up turning the place around. Now it's just, yeah. I still don't want to go there. It's still kind of a shithole, but, you know, you're not getting robbed. But sort of the idea was that all of New York falls apart within the next decade or so, and they just turn it into a, you know, penal colony.
Yeah. The lore for Escape from New York and Escape from LA is actually really great, because, like, even Chicago is its own, like, prison thing, too.
Yeah.
I like Snake Plissken as a character. He's a very, very 80s action hero.
Yep.
I miss it.
Yeah, and they had talked a long time about doing either a sequel or a remake of it, and I don't think
a remake would work. Not today. No.
A sequel would be fine. You could, you know, you could have Kurt Russell show up as Snake Plissken, and if they really wanted to franchise this thing, you have him hand off to the reins to some other actor that's very beloved. To not play Snake, but, you know, Snake's protege or whatever.
Python. Python,
yeah, okay. Yeah, Python Plissken, his son.
Python Plissken's son. hell, if Karate Kid could come back and be a TV series, why can't Escape from LA become, or Escape from New York become its own TV series?
It should. It absolutely should. They can absolutely franchise it. They did two movies of it. They might not have made a shit ton of money, but they are absolutely cult classics. The entire Metal Gear saga was sort of based off of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think I came up with a title for the episode. The Tales of Python Plissken.
No, like, I'd like to run a nice game in that kind of genre, too, you know? I really want to kind of go back to the Fantasy Flight Star Wars system, where you make, like, little dice pools and you roll for success and failures.
Yeah.
I really like that system. It's very, very story-driven, so I think, like, that would work really well in, like, a cyberpunk-type game, or, you know, like, an Escape from LA-type game. Like, you don't really need much of a system, just a thing to dictate whether or not a success or a failure happens, with some bonuses, and let people kind of like just talk their way through. So something not as complicated as like even 5e was, you know.
Yeah.
You just kind of sit around the table and just kind of roll dice and just I hope I got the sixes. And then he failed.
So Escape from New York has a board game.
Oh, yeah, I know they have a board game. I've never seen it.
They did a... Oh, wait, no, they have a crowdfunding one coming up at the in the next few months.
Ooh, crowdfunding. That just takes all my money. I did buy the Dark Tower remake that they have coming out.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's already been out for a while, but I got the second printing of it, so that's coming here soon. I'm looking forward to that. But that's just more kind of like the tower just runs the game for you, and you just kind of move around the board.
Still, I'm looking forward to it, just that way whenever I come back over, I can play.
Yeah, you should come down to Charleston in October or December. I'm running a Halloween D&D session on October 29th at Zenergy Gamers. And then I'm running the Everyone's Been Naughty Christmas one shot that I wrote at Zenergy as well, too. So we got a lot of plans.
Lots of plans. So let me tell you about my time in Ravenloft
this week. Oh, yeah.
Because I've always loved the idea of Ravenloft. I've loved the setting and the fact that it's Dungeons and Dragons, but it's goth with vampires, Strahd, and everything. But I have never gotten to play it. I did get to play the 5e Ravenloft for two game sessions a few years back when it first came out. And the DM was absolutely horrible. And yeah, everybody pretty much quit that game shortly after. Mm-hmm. So this was the first time I've actually gotten to play it where I really was wanting to play. I have made myself a cleric of fate. And the rest of our party, I don't know if, I would imagine the way it starts off was the same way that our DM was running it, where you're effectively working for a duchess or a baroness or something like that. And then a bunch of travelers show up and you try to get them to leave, but instead you end up going and helping them, which takes you into Barovia.
Mm-hmm.
Have you run it or at least read it?
I read pieces of it. Like I know the basic setup, but the only part that I've run is the chapter, the one shot, which I'm actually running.
Which is,
this year.
Yeah. Which is the ending basically. Okay.
No, it's only in the middle of the book.
Well, it's later in the book though. So we end up, I'm sorry, let me backtrack. So we were trying to figure out exactly why we were all friends, because the idea was that you work for this duchess. Doesn't mean that you know these other people that you're with, just that you know, they're associates or coworkers. So in the process of all of this, we came to find out that two of the party members were bards, and I am proficient in the violin. So we decided that we were going to be a band. Okay. Now, for us to be a band, that requires us to have a band name. So what do? And you're playing D&D and you need a band name? You go to Reddit and you find one.
Randomnamegenerator.com, man.
No. These are Dungeons and Dragons band names. And I'm just going to read you a few of them because we went through a huge list of them.
Okay.
And some of these are really, really good. Let's see. The Rolling Stone Golems.
Start off with a good classic right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Aerosmith.
But Arrow?
Yeah. Aerosmith. A-A-R-O-W. Florence and the Warforged.
Oh, I thought it'd be War Machine.
Yeah, well, Warforged is the thing. Yeah. Let's see. Mithril Back.
It should be Copperback.
I was thinking Electrum Back.
Electrum Back?
Yeah. the next one is my favorite of all of them. Hootie and the Succubus.
I love that one.
Yeah, that was at the top of the list. We ended up going with a different one, but we had three or four of them that were right there. That's just fucking brilliant. Hootie and the Succubus. Death Leprechaun. my favorite, not my favorite, but my character's favorite was Judas Cleric, since I play a cleric. There's Adamantine Dirigible.
Yeah.
Instead of Led Zeppelin. let's see. Daft Monk.
Eh.
Oh, come on. That's good.
Eh.
That's really good. Let's see. Blue Aboleth Cult.
I like that one.
Yeah. let's see. There's a couple others. Michael Orkson.
I don't get that one.
Instead of Michael Jackson, Michael Orkson.
Oh. Okay.
They might be giants.
You didn't change that one.
Yeah, I know.
They might be Goliaths.
Yeah, well, okay. It could have been, yeah. Or they could have gone with they might be dwarves. let's see. Lawful Good Charlotte. And the one that we actually... Oh, wait, hang on. Here's another one. Grateful Undead. Lich Astley instead of Rick Astley. But
I like that one.
Yeah, they're like, those are some of the better ones. The one we actually ended up going with was Motley Crusade.
I got one for you.
All right.
New Kobolds on the Block.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man. This one-shot idea.
Just a bunch of kobold bards.
Yeah. Well, I've been planning on running a music-based one-shot for a while. Mm-hmm. Where my players, they were all going to be hobgoblins, and they were going to be in effectively a heavy metal band named Hobgoblin Valhalla. And the idea was that somebody had stolen their instruments and they hadn't figured it out. Well, there's the villain.
The new kobolds on the block.
Yep. Fucking pop music, stealing the metalheads' guitars.
I'll help you write it. We can publish it.
Yeah, that'll never happen. You know it won't. I don't write down.
You don't
down
know me. Well, I know you.
Yep, you know that I don't write down anything. But yeah.
Well, that's all that I had. I am exhausted. I need to sleep for like 14 hours, and I think that it starts right now.
Not yet. You got a couple more minutes.
No, honestly, that's all I have. I mean, the only other topic that I have is I do want to talk to you about what happened with Spelljammer back in 2E.
Oh, but, yeah, because you got the 2E book, finally.
Yeah, I did get the 2E book, but I was talking to another player, and he was talking about how, like, it split the community, and I don't know anything about that at all.
Are you talking about Spelljammer coming out splitting mm-hmm. it? Oh, I'm not even surprised. It didn't really affect my local gaming community, and you have to realize this is before the internet when that thing came out, so there wasn't the communication between playgroups wasn't as much of a thing as it is now. Spelljammer, where I lived, we didn't play it. Nobody owned it. It wasn't really a thing. Now, it coming out, I would imagine, did kind of piss off a lot of people. But I haven't looked into this. This is just me sort of throwing out thoughts from that time period.
So I want to look into it a little bit more and try to figure it out. Like for me, from my standpoint, it's just like it's just another setting. Use it or don't.
Yeah. Correct. But it did introduce in something that had always been. It was always a thing, but it was always sort of frowned upon by a large portion of the community, and that was adding sci-fi into the Dungeons and Dragons. Because even in first edition, before Shadowrun was ever a thing, Gary Gygax and I'm pretty sure it came from Gygax, but laser weapons had been introduced into the setting, and spaceships, the Spelljammer ships had been around since first edition, but there was never a core setting for it. And I know there were a lot of gamers who hated science fiction being mixed with their fantasy.
Because, like, from that standpoint, and that's like, you know, why my wife doesn't want to play Spelljammer is because she doesn't want sci-fi in her fantasy.
Yeah, see, it's still a thing.
But it's, you know, there's a couple players in AL that feel the same way, but I've, all the stuff that I've read with Spelljammer, I don't see any sci-fi. I understand that these ships are flying through space.
But, well, laser weapons are a thing.
And they've always been a thing.
Yes.
But, like, a Nautiloid ship, there's no sci-fi to it. It's still just a weird ship that flies around.
No, it's more of you're flying through outer space.
Yeah, but just being in space does not make it sci-fi.
But that's how the view is. That's how the thoughts are on it. If it's in outer space, it's science fiction. Even if you're not using science to fly your ships, people are still viewing it as that. You know, you're flying from one planet to another. The planets up until Spelljammer came out were always sort of separated. You couldn't go from Kryn to Toril. That wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
Now, man, you know, nothing was ever set in stone. You know, I know that at least in Dragon Magazine, because there were a lot of writers and so forth, that there was times and meetings with characters from different worlds. Like Elminster would meet up with Morden Kanan, and they would have a beer and, you know, talk about stories and stuff. Yeah, people get. We talk about it a lot on here. Don't fuck with people's canon. What they want to believe is canon. You start messing with that, and it will irritate portions of the community.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see Spelljammer as sci-fi in any capacity.
I do. I think
just because you're in space, it's not sci-fi.
Yeah, truthfully, it's what I would refer to it as sci fantasy.
It's space fantasy.
Yeah,
it's Flash Gordon is more sci-fi than Spelljammer.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But Flash Gordon is also the lowest end of sci-fi.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway. No. Yeah, I don't know what it is like. I'm weird when it comes to novels and stuff. I don't like reading sci-fi novels. I really, really enjoy reading fantasy novels. But when it comes to the other media that I partake in, I prefer sci-fi to fantasy. And I really have never... I don't normally like the two to mix. Although Shadowrun, kind of an exception there.
Yeah. Doctor Who is a good example of like a lot of good fantasy and a lot of good sci-fi at the same time.
Yeah.
But like, there's obvious tech there, machinery, you know?
Well, yeah, he had not a pocket watch.
You're about to offend a lot of people if you say the wrong thing.
I don't give a shit.
I know the right thing, but you better say the right thing.
He had a sonic screwdriver that could literally do anything he wanted.
Yeah, that was, that's more of a New Who thing, but.
No, like Tom Baker had it. He used it all the damn time.
Yeah, he had it, used it all the damn time, but it wasn't the MacGuffin that solved the problem.
Okay, it wasn't MacGyver in his hand.
Right.
Yeah.
It didn't work on wood.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, it had to have some sort of electrical components or something. Mechanical components, at least, for it to be useful.
Well, he gets one later that works on wood.
Oh. Well, maybe if it's a wooden block or something, but still, that kind of seems stupid. Oh, well. All right. Now I think we're done. I'll let you get some sleep.
There's sonic lipstick later, too.
Yeah. Bye, Craig.